welcome to the Glow Journal podcast, a conversation with the beautiful minds behind the world's biggest beauty brands. I'm your host, beauty writer Gemma Diamond, and in this episode, I'm joined by the founder of Yours Only, Ashley Templar. We obviously talk a lot on this podcast about identifying a gap for a product and developing out of a really genuine need, and I think the Yours Only story is probably one of the best examples of that that we've covered across all six seasons. Ash grew up, in her words, not being able to eat any cake at birthday parties. She's always had many, many food allergies, and things were only heightened in her 20s when she was diagnosed with both Hashimoto's and a salicylate intolerance, amongst other things. It was following prolonged exposure to mold, just on top of everything else, that Ash's health was at its worst. And for an extended period, there were only 7 foods she could consume. Just let that sink in. After having to overhaul every single element of her daily routine, she realized that there were only very few skin and hair care brands that she could use and none that she particularly wanted to use. Ash launched Yours Only in 2020, a skin and hair care line for dramatic skin, and has cultivated one of the most incredible communities I have ever seen online. Ash started her founder journey with a wish to change lives, and as you'll hear here, I really believe that that is exactly what she's done. In this conversation, Ashley shares how she rebuilt after losing her entire inventory in an arson attack, why she uses her customers as her models, and the serendipitous story behind how she found her manufacturer. You and I first met about 10 years ago, which was a rude awakening.
I know.
I started writing these questions, but we were both working in fashion, but I want to rewind even further.
Mm-hmm.
What is your very earliest memory of beauty?
My mum actually worked for Nutramedics when I was a little girl. So I used to steal all of her makeup.
Yeah.
She also used to work for Estee Lauder.
Oh my God.
So I was always wearing the foundations and mascaras and stuff. So I just was obsessed from when I was just so little.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I look at preteens now who have access to everything and I'm like, oh my God, if I had said to my mother I want a foundation, she would have been like, here's something from 36 years ago.
Literally. Yeah, I used to just raid her cupboard when she was at work and just try it all at home in front of the mirror. I was obsessed.
Okay, so an early affinity for beauty. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually always wanted to be a product developer because I just love doing bits. I just love being busy and doing things, but originally it was for fashion.
Okay.
Because when I left school, I actually studied fashion product development. So it was like half marketing, half buying, half design.
Mm-hmm.
So I always just wanted to be some sort of product developer, which is crazy because now that's what I do, but in the beauty space.
Wow. Okay. So even when you were at uni, because I know you did comms as well, what was the plan post studies or was it still product development?
I know we'll get there, but basically when I left school, I went to RMIT and I did product development in fashion.
Yeah.
So my goal was to work in fashion to do that.
Uh-huh.
So essentially I really wanted to design clothes.
What does product development in fashion look like as opposed to fashion design, or are they kind of?
It's similar, but there's different things. Like if you think, for example, of like Camilla Frank, she has like a specific look.
Yeah,
you know,
so she
probably goes by trends, but mainly her own thing. Whereas product development, I really wanted to be able to go overseas, find all the trends, bring it back here, and then develop it based off that. But I found within Australia, you can't really do that as much. You basically have to follow the trend, and there's no creativity on top of that.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you did go overseas. You spent time living and working in New York. Tell me more about that time and in what ways it was kind of formative as far as your career goes.
Yeah, so I had broken up with my boyfriend and it was devastating and I just said to everyone, I'm going to move overseas. And when you're 21, you think you're invincible. Oh. So I finished uni and had a degree and was like, I can get a job anywhere.
Yes.
So I jumped on a plane and went to New York, didn't know anyone, not a soul. Like even when I got there, my like apartment fell through and everything.
Oh my God.
It worked out. And so I ended up working in buying, and then I did lots of freelance little gigs for places. And it was tough because you spend so much money on rent and you get paid nothing when you're there. And I made so many amazing friends and met so many people in the fashion industry. But then I kind of had this love for writing and communication. I wasn't amazing at it, but I loved it. So that's when I came back to Melbourne, and then I did my Master of Communications. So that's where I kind of combined the two together.
Okay. The timelines are
combining.
Yeah, I love this. Okay, so that takes us to 2012. You then spend the next 5 or 6 years working across fashion and beauty, doing a lot of social media management. Now, this is a time when brands were really starting to see the value in social media, which is so funny to think about now because it's just a given. But that was a time where it was like, all right, guys, we are going to set up an Instagram account. So I would love to hear more about what that period taught you about building a brand and a presence online.
Yeah, it's crazy because I feel like my social media career, I was the youngest person in that team everywhere I went because it was so new and there was no budget put towards social media. So I actually started as an intern in the design team at Bardot.
Yes.
And then I ended up getting some paid days when I was there, and then that was specifically in design. And then they were like, oh, there's a bit of correlation between the designs and what needs to be marketed.
Mm-hmm.
So then they gave me this hybrid role where I was half design, half communications.
Yeah.
So then I was helping out with their Instagram, and then from there I feel like I was able to combine like both degrees and then at the same time be able to push out like more of my communication studies and all of that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, I've basically moved from various fashion or beauty brands to do it. And it's been amazing because I think like it's been good to start from the absolute infancy of social media to now, but now it's so different. Like I'm not really on TikTok and like that's the thing to do, which is why I kind of, which we'll get to, I don't really work in social media specifically anymore because evolve so much, you age, you kind of grow out of it. But the most important thing was like always staying true to the brand. And I feel like so many businesses with older CEOs, older marketing managers never really could correlate between connecting with the customer and the brand.
Yeah.
Which is really hard.
It's wild how much it's changed. I was late to TikTok in the grand scheme of things. Someone commented the other day saying, oh, you were much better on TikTok 2 years ago. Honey, I wasn't on TikTok 2 years ago. It was
like,
June 2022. So how dare you? Okay, so all of this is happening career-wise. Busy, busy, busy. Meanwhile, you are dealing with allergies and intolerances that you've had your whole life that you're trying to get to the bottom of. Can you talk me through that experience? I heard you say in a previous interview that that was quite isolating and you felt pretty alone because this was obviously, you know, today we talk about intolerances. Mm. People have got them. People are aware of them, but that may not have been the case then.
Yeah. To go back to the day I was born, I've always just been that sick kid, and like I had eczema, I had asthma, I was allergic to breast milk.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, so that's like as far as it goes. And then as a kid, I was one of those kids that just like never ate the cake at the party and never had dairy, and it was fine. It was like livable, but then I think my diet was so restricted as a kid because it had to be. And then when I moved out of home and I lived overseas, I trialed new things. I also lived in like old buildings. And then when I came back from living in New York, I just knew that there was something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I went to multiple doctors and found out that I had Hashimoto's disease, which is a thyroid condition.
Right.
But it was one of those things where the doctors were like, you're too skinny, you're too young, there's no way that you would have this. So it took like a year for them to diagnose it. And essentially it was that my thyroid was attacking my own body. So yeah, it was so hard. I had like brain fog. I had lots of food intolerances. My body just like did not respond well when I was too busy. And like it's a very manageable condition, but you have to manage it for your entire life. Yeah. So that was the start. And then food-wise, I ended up working out that I had a fructose intolerance, which for people that have that, sometimes it's only like certain foods. I was just intolerant to the whole thing.
Perfect. Yep.
And then I moved into a place in Windsor in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I was there for like 4 years and loved it. And it had mushrooms growing from the walls. And when you're like 22, 23, you just laugh and just email the real estate and then they fix it.
Yeah.
But the person that fixed it was the landlord, who was cheap. And then it just kept growing back.
Yeah.
And then my housemate Joe at the time, he was like, I'm getting sick every month. I feel like we should move. So we moved to another place and then my intolerances just were so bad. Like I got to the point where I could only eat seven foods, and this was until like...
Seven?
Yeah. Literally seven foods. So it was like chicken, carrots, bok choy, not even rice. I could only have like quinoa.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was really, really basic, and I had to basically eat like the same foods every day.
Yeah.
And no doctor like at all could work it out. Like I went and got colonoscopies and they said it's down to stress, tried to put me on like medication to reduce stress levels. And I'm like, it's not stress. There's something else happening.
Yeah.
And I literally went to every specialist possible and ended up working out that it was mold illness, because mold can attack like anywhere in your system.
Right.
So it was in my brain because it was giving me brain fog. Oh, it was like in my whole digestive tract, in my stomach. Yeah, it affects everything.
Okay, so that's on top of already having been diagnosed with Hashimoto's.
Correct, yeah.
So your thyroid's attacking
the whole system.
Yeah. And then, oh my God.
The thyroid thing isn't too bad if you have it controlled. So essentially you just have to have medication every day.
Right.
I don't eat red meat because it like slows down your system, and I don't do high intensity exercise because your body needs to be slow and calm.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, that's a breeze compared to everything else.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I ended up seeing this incredible dietitian who was recommended to me, who was like, okay, I know that you've had eczema as a child, you've had really bad asthma. I think you do have a thing called a salicylate intolerance.
I have got that written down. Yeah.
So
what is that?
I know. I'd never heard of it either. And because I was so intolerant to so many foods, I thought that I had covered the whole list. Mm. Salicylates are essentially a natural pesticide that's found in fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So think of like a banana that's green versus brown. If it's green, it's got low salicylates. If it's brown, it's got high salicylates. So it's its own way of getting bugs to not eat it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So basically I couldn't eat any fruits or vegetables. I could eat like more vegetables than fruit.
Yeah.
And that's basically how I came up with the Oz Only idea. And I know we'll get to that, but essentially like all skincare that people want to buy is all 100% natural.
Yeah.
And I couldn't use it. So when the salicylate intolerance came up, I had to change all of my cleaning products. So I was cleaning my house with just bicarb and vinegar.
Yep.
I had to change all of my soaps. I had to change literally everything. Couldn't use candles, couldn't use an oil burner. I had to get rid of anything that was considered as like too potent and too natural in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, we could do 3 hours on the natural versus chemical in inverted commas. Debate. I know. Plenty of thoughts on that one.
Lots of education needed on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How long does it... So I'm just... I'm processing all of this. I can't imagine how you were, but how long did it take for your body to come back to not just being able to eat seven foods and for the brain fog to go and for...
It was a very gradual process.
Yeah.
So I ended up working out that it was a salicylate intolerance. It also was like histamine, so wine, anything that ages. So aged meat, which I don't really have anyway, cheeses, which I don't really have anyway, but, you know, anything that would be high in histamine, glutamates, like so many different foods. And then I moved from her to a naturopath who tried to help, and she was like, the only way that I can help you is with herbs.
Yeah.
And all herbs are high in salicylates. Yeah, okay. Then she passed me on to an integrated GP. Then she passed me on to an integrated GP, and she like changed my life. She was like, this will take a long time. So it was 2 years of treatment, because she also uses herbs and couldn't use them. So I had to do things like take clay tablets, which basically stuck onto the mold and stripped through my system.
Wow.
Yeah, the same clay that you would do like a face mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to have like 3 saunas a week. I basically had to like sweat it all out and then basically rebuild my entire immune system. And I was able to introduce new foods and then fell pregnant.
Yes.
Yeah. So she kind of helped me fall pregnant because I had a really bad case of COVID 2 years ago and had salmonella and my whole system just like crashed and then my periods went all off. So then she kind of helped me rebuild that, helped me fall pregnant. So about a month before I fell pregnant, I was able to introduce a few foods.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you know, but a lot of the time when you fall pregnant, like your intolerances go away.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they're all gone. But just whilst you're pregnant. Yeah. So I'm like eating everything at the minute and it's so amazing.
I did not know that. So many of my girlfriends who have been pregnant recently have all had gestational diabetes. Oh. So they went the other way. They've gone from being able to eat everything they want to then we're out for dinner and they're like, sorry.
Yeah. So I'm also celiac, so I can't have any gluten, which to me is like a breeze. It's a walk in the park.
Yeah, I'm gluten intolerant.
Now it is. Yeah. When I was 17, not so much.
Yeah.
So allergy-wise, gluten, dairy and nuts I can't have. Yeah. But all the other intolerances, I can eat anything. It's
oh
so good.
Oh, my gosh. We'll enjoy that for the next two weeks. Big fun. We're recording this at 38 weeks.
I know. I said to my doctor the other day, I was like, so how long do I have?
Yeah.
And she was like, it really depends. Like some people it comes back and some it doesn't.
Wow.
But she said if I breastfeed, it will help.
Yeah.
So I'm like trying to make sure I can breastfeed.
Is crazy.
Yeah. So apparently it's because your body wants to protect the baby.
Yeah.
And it gets rid of a lot of other things. But I'm like, it's the same gut. It's the same microbiome. I don't understand. So once I have the baby, I'm just going to keep going and see how I go.
Yeah, watch this space. We might have to do a follow-up.
I know.
A little call in. How are your intolerances?
So it's been really good. Actually, when I say this though, like the first 27 weeks of pregnancy was rough. I was really sick.
Life
was hard. And then all of a sudden at 28 weeks, I just feel amazing.
Love that.
Yeah. I'm like, this is the best I've literally ever felt, except for the fact I've got like a watermelon in front of me.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm
all things
good.
Considered.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, let's go back to Korea.
So yeah. The reason we're here.
Yeah. Okay, so there's so much happened. Oh, my God. This mind blowing. 2017.
Yes.
So all of this is happening. 2017, you founded your own business, mm-hmm. Pep Creative. Tell me about it. Tell me why you wanted to do your own thing.
I guess I'm just an independent person in general. Working in social media was something that I kind of fell into because I obviously wanted to do product development.
Yeah.
And working in house has so many limitations and I felt like I was at a point where I could just do it myself. Mm-hmm. I had like friends who were doing other things themselves and they had clients that I could potentially take on.
Yeah.
So it was just the perfect time. I think I was like at the end of a role where I was like, I've done everything I can do here. And then I just wanted to start my own thing. It kind of just like happened really quickly. And then I ended up just growing it organically. I'm not very good at like selling myself of like cold calling emails. So the whole, I've never ever cold called or anything. It's all just been through word of mouth.
Love that.
And then, so I kind of started off freelance and then I kind of grew it with a team and then I ended up with like a team of six.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm doing pretty amazing brands. Yeah.
August 2020 is when you launched Yours Only,
mm-hmm.
the thing that we're here to talk about. But all of this is it all kind of makes sense together. At what point did you first start to think of creating a brand of your own? Was there a light bulb moment or was it kind of a slow burn?
Yeah, so the Salicylate thing really threw my life around.
Yeah.
And the only products I could buy, I won't say the brand names, but they were just real boring from the chemist. And they also had parabens and sulfates in them.
Yeah, okay.
And parabens and sulfates are hormone disruptors. And I also have Hashimoto's. So I was like, I probably really shouldn't be using these products. And then I'm a big yoga gal and I was just in a yoga class and I was just like, I think I need to make my own. But it wasn't like whenever I tell someone I have a skincare brand, they're like, oh, do you make it in your kitchen and sell at the local market? Like that's what they think. And I'm like, it's cute that you think that, but like my mind is like big. Like I'm like, I feel like I could change people's lives.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I feel like this is my time. Like I'm going through this right now. I like cried about it because I was like, I can't eat anything. I can't buy anything.
Yeah.
I remember going into a store and asking them if they had anything that was like low salicylate. And like they obviously didn't know what it was.
No.
So yeah, in a yoga class light bulb moment, I called my dad. He's like, you're going to need like $100,000 for that. I'm like, yeah. Let me think about that. But I developed it over 2 years. So I think over 2 years makes it a bit different.
Definitely.
Because you can, yeah, accumulate the money. Essentially what I did was I pretended to my clients that I had like 4 staff.
Of course.
But it was just me.
Yeah, yeah. I've got admin at Glow Journal.
Literally. I was like, I'll pass that on to someone in the team.
Yeah.
So I essentially just had a lot of retainer clients, pretended that I had a whole team. The cost of what it would have been to hire that team member I put aside, and then I used that money to put towards Yours Only.
I love that. I also appreciate that you haven't just made it seem like this very easy, simple thing that you clicked your fingers, because that has happened on this show before and I won't name any names. Okay, so where did you start? You've realized, okay, I need to save up all this money.
Mm-hmm.
2 years of product development. Talk me through that time. How did you find the right manufacturers, work out the packaging, even land on the name? Like, it's one thing to have the idea, totally different thing to actually work through the steps and bring it to life. Yeah,
totally. So when I went freelance / started my agency, I was in like a freelance bubble with my best friend Elise, who you know. So she has a copywriting agency.
God love her.
And no. And then my friend Mel, who used to have a branding agency.
Mm-hmm.
And so the three of us were just like the perfect little package for brands. Yeah. So I was like, this is great for you guys to help me with creating the brand. As I said earlier, I just love doing bits. So like, you know, finding the manufacturer, doing the spreadsheets, organizing all the things, doing all the research. Like, I love doing all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think you're probably similar. Just like love finding information.
Obsessed.
Yeah. So the first thing was to find a manufacturer, and I went and saw a few people. And the one that I landed on, she actually also had a salicylate intolerance.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's spooky.
Spooky, right? So she had very similar experience of allergies and intolerances to me, and she started the brand off the back of having nothing that she could use, and then became like a chemist formulator. So she is like the guinea pig. Like, if she can use the products, then it's good for the customer too. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. So we started with them. The process of actually making a product is like not as easy as what people think.
Oh, so it's not just mixing things in your bathroom.
No, not in my bathroom or my kitchen and then just selling it at the chemist.
Yeah.
Basically, I had more of a no list than a yes list.
This is what I wanted to talk to you about, because when I ask founders about their non-negotiables, they're like, I just wanted it to be efficacious and it had to be beautiful to use, whereas for what you're doing and the space that you're in, I can't imagine that it was just tick, tick, off we go.
It was so hard, because I would say, I don't really mind what's in it as long as it's not any of these.
Yeah.
And she was like, this is a unicorn product. Like, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. And everywhere I went basically was like, we can't do this. And then I just was like, I think you can. I just helped. Like, I mean, I didn't help with the ingredients in terms of like the efficiency of each of them, but I basically said, like, these are the ones that could work.
Yeah.
And then we just build them all together. She's just like a genius in terms of like combining all the ingredients together. And basically there's lots of things. You've got to get the sample. If the sample's correct, you've got to make sure it passes all these different tests. So there's all the just basic skincare tests that you've got to do. Like, if you put the product in an oven at 40 degrees for 3 months, then, and it survives, then it will last on a shelf for 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, that's one test you have to do. There's a color test you have to do, because like, you know, if it turns a different color, people go a bit like grossed out. And then there's the dermatologically testing that you have to do.
Yes.
So there's lots of different terminology. So the word hypoallergenic is completely made up.
What?
Yeah. No, there's no governing body that actually governs it.
I work in this industry and I didn't know that.
So hypoallergenic, you can say on anything, because no one's going to, you know, cross your name off for
it. Wow.
And so if it's dermatologically tested, it means it's actually been tested on people.
Yeah.
So I send mine off and it gets tested on a sample of people, and they have to wear it in a patch on their skin for 2 months, and it gets ripped off every day and they test it every day.
Amazing.
But if it's dermatologically recommended, someone's just paid a dermatologist to say that it's good.
That one I knew.
Yeah. So yeah, that takes like 4 months, because you've got to send it and you've got to, you know, get into the timeline that they're working on, and you can't really go to print until it's been approved, because if it hasn't been approved, you've got to go back and change the formulation.
Yeah.
But then if you have to go back and change the formulation based on the dermatologically testing, then you've got to redo all the other tests.
Oh,
so everything is so long.
And I would imagine for you even longer, given that it is a brand specifically for reactive, sensitive skins.
Yeah. Luckily, because I'm so sensitive, I could just test it on me first.
Yeah.
And then we've never had any issues when we've sent it away and it failing.
Yeah.
Thank God so far. Because, that's great. Well, the ingredients are like so gentle that I think that we were pretty safe. But you never know. You never know.
It's fine. Everything's fine. All right. So you launch with two products, Clean and Coat. What was the reception like on launch? There's obviously a massive, and I talk about this with every founder, there's a huge education piece that comes with launching anything. But I would imagine because what you were doing was for, you know, a specific reason and a specific person, that education piece needs to be a little bit more thorough. So how did you go about bringing new customers into the fold?
Yeah, interesting. I think before launching Yours Only, I never really spoke about my health experience because it was so isolating. Like no one really spoke about it except for my very close friends. Mm-hmm. And when I decided to start the brand, I was like, this is my time to actually share the information.
Yeah.
So I started sharing it to my 3,000 followers. And after sharing that, I felt like a lot of people were like, oh, this is so interesting. You're going to start a brand based off that. I have a cousin that has the same experience or a sister or a brother or whatever. So it's so much more common than what people think. People don't really talk about it. So everything was organic for like the first month. Yeah. And like day one, we had like $3,000 in sales.
Wow.
Just from posting on my personal Instagram.
Man, the power of just like getting a little vulnerable.
I know. And just basically talking about the whole process.
Yeah.
And it was also peak lockdown. People had a bit more money, I guess, and wanted like nice skincare.
Sure. But I mean, on the flip side, launching a brand during the lockdown. Yep.
Yeah, yep. That was rough. I just never thought the brand would launch because everything takes so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, you tell someone you're making a skincare brand and they're like, cool.
Cute.
When's that coming? And then, yeah, it was incredible. And I think the response was really good. I just have a lot of people who were very supportive and I think they shared it as well.
Love it. Coming from a comms, social media marketing, product development background, what was it like building a strategy and a presence online for your own brand as opposed to that of a client? Did that process change at all?
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you are dating a plumber and there's always a leaking tap.
As someone who's married to a carpenter.
I was like, I feel like you have a trading partner.
Yeah.
It was kind of like I would do a full strategy document for a client. And then for me, I was like, I'll just post. Yep. I know exactly, I have the vision in my mind. I know exactly what it needs to be. I prepped a lot. Like I did a photo shoot because I have production background. I did all the things that I needed to do. And I had like a long list of stuff. I wrote the whole website. I helped like not the design of the website, but I helped with the creation of the website and feedback and all of that. But it was all just like, okay, well, what's next? It wasn't really like, this is the full set of what I'm going to do based on what I do for my clients.
Yeah.
Because I also had another business to run at the same time.
Yeah.
So I wrote the website.
And that business is where the money's coming from.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was the hard thing too. So I wrote the website during lockdown for 3 months on the weekends.
Wow.
You don't really feel like a website would take that long, but like as a writer, you would know. But it just took so long because everything had to be so well thought out, so educated. I had to write what every ingredient does, what it doesn't do, what we don't include, all of that kind of stuff.
Wow. What were some lessons that you picked up from the first year or so in business that you would pass on to anyone else who was moving into the startup space?
A few things. One, get insurance,
which
we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Make sure you have full cover insurance no matter – I paid like $5,000 before I even made a cent on insurance. But that also came from the money from the agency that I had saved. The other thing is like take your time because there's so many things that happen in the production process that you're like, oh, I should have just waited.
Yeah.
So like we had to change the size of one of our products because of the machine in one of the factories.
Oh.
And I'd already spent like $4,000 on the packaging and I was like, this is now redundant.
Yeah.
So we've got it sitting there waiting for – it was basically pouches. So we can use these pouches somewhere, but it was like if I had have waited for that to be approved, then I wouldn't have ordered the pouches and I wouldn't have had to pay for the freight for them. So do everything in order.
Yeah, okay. I love a practical piece of advice rather than just, you know what,
Go with
just
the flow.
Go for it. Yeah.
I learned that go with the flow doesn't work. When you're spending like thousands of dollars, you have to follow the process.
Oh, there is a huge amount of privilege that comes with being able to quote unquote go with the flow. Mm. That's, yeah, conversation for another time. You have, I mean, as we've just touched on, you shared your story online. That's how you educated people initially on what you were doing. But since then, you've cultivated a really, really amazing community online of other people who are suffering, have suffered from everything from skin sensitivities right through to chronic illness.
Yep.
How have you gone about creating and facilitating that space for people?
Yeah, I think that's my favorite part of the job, like making new friends. Yep. Essentially, I shared so much of my story because when I actually launched the brand, I was still going through flare-ups.
Yeah.
So there was like one occasion where I had a bite of an apple and I was covered in hives for like 2 weeks. Now I eat an apple a day. But it was just sharing all of that, people responding and saying, thank you for sharing this story. And then I would ask them about their story. So at the time I was doing everything. So customer service was like my number one. And they would tell me a bit about their story and I was like, would you mind if I shared it? So then I would share it on our page, and now we're at the point where we share a story a week.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's my favorite because, you know, you make friends with them. I've also found like there's a few things where I was still going through the thick of it and customers or the community members would be like, have you tried this? And then I would try it and I'd be like, oh my gosh, like that changed my life. So I feel like I found my people.
Yeah.
And like those people weren't cool when I was younger, you know?
Yeah.
Oh. And now I feel like I've got this amazing group of community people who give me advice or tips of things to do with the brand or ideas. And then now I use them in photo shoots. So they're like our actual models on our website. That's and incredible. I'm now friends with them.
I just like that at the beginning of this whole idea, you were saying, no, I actually feel like I can change people's lives with this. And you have, like, that must be the most amazing feeling to have people who have struggled for so, so, so long coming to you and being like, this is actually, because there's a huge confidence piece.
100%. That comes along with it. Yeah. Oh, I had food anxiety for years.
Of course.
I just didn't eat out for like 3 years because it was so stressful.
Yeah.
And being able to share that with the community is like something that I would never normally share. Yeah. And other people experience that too. My naturopath is basically just funded by me because I just give people her details all the time and I give people my doctor's details if I feel like they're, you know, going through a similar thing. So I feel like I've made friends with all these people and, you know, they've been like, I saw your naturopath and now my skin's better.
I love that.
I know, it's crazy because it's not just skincare. Like,
no.
I'm not silly in the sense that, like, you use my moisturizer and it will go away. A lot of the time for me, a lot of it was my immune system, my gut microbiome. So I was like, you need to see a naturopath, check your gut. They check their gut, they get it fixed, then they use the product and then their life is so much better.
It's the confidence piece that blows my – like I had a flare up on my face, 3 days ago, and I'm at home sooking about it. Then I'm like, people are dealing with this for their whole life.
Their whole life, I know.
Yeah.
And
perspective.
The fact that like – the models that we use have full flare-ups on their arms, their legs, everywhere. And they're like smiling in the photos and they couldn't like care less that they're showing off these flares.
That's incredible. Which is a slight pivot. January 2023.
My favorite time.
I remember seeing this on the news. You lost your entire inventory, every last bit of it after an arson attack.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what it's not just a freak fire.
No.
It's an arson attack.
Yeah.
Talk me through that time. What happened? How you rebuilt from there?
So it was the morning of my hens party.
No.
Yeah, it was. It was like Elise was taking me out that day and then my hens party proper was the next day. Yeah. And I got a text from the warehouse. I was using a 3PL, which basically is someone else packs and sends you orders and your brand is in a warehouse with multiple other brands as well.
Yeah.
And they were like, just letting you know that there's been a fire and we don't have any more details. And then I went to a yoga class and the whole class I was like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, that's...
And then I got out and I texted him and I was like, I kind of need to know a bit more information. My husband Luke is one of those people that just like knows where to Google. So he just Googled it. He was like, okay, so it was in warehouse number 2 at this... But how do you know that? Apparently, like, all fires are on the Fire Brigade websites.
Oh.
In case you want to know.
Fun.
So he found out where it was, but I didn't know which warehouse I was in because there were two warehouses next to each other. They moved them around. So then he called me and he was like, yeah, I'm so sorry to let you know that every single box, every single product is completely gone. And they were like, you know, we'll do anything we can to help you, blah, blah, blah. So there was two sides of a warehouse, 13 brands on one side. I was one of those 13 brands where all their stock left. And then the other side, coincidentally, there was a firewall between them, so they didn't get affected at all. So they're really lucky. And of those 13 brands, I would say maybe a third of them are still here today because it was too hard for them to rebuild. I know, it's crazy.
Wow.
I was so lucky that I had insurance.
Yeah, okay. When you said we'll talk about this later, you don't say.
Yeah, so it didn't cover – like it covered everything, but you've also got to consider like minimum order quantities.
Yeah.
So like I didn't – I have to reorder everything but more than the stock that I already had. So I had to invest obviously more money into that. And then very, very luckily I had packaging for some of the products in another warehouse.
God.
But to get back on the production line to fill it, they were like, we actually can't get you back on for 3 months. So, yeah, it's crazy. So we went on pre-order, but, you know, people were so supportive and, like, we had an amazing community and, like, no one was like, when is it coming? They were like, we'll just support you now, which helped a little bit. And then I got married and went on my honeymoon and then was just like, you know what? Customer service will be chill. I don't have to like do too much. I'm just going to use this time to reset.
Yeah.
And then we basically didn't really relaunch with all of our products for like 5 or 6 months.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
So you've well and truly rebuilt since launching with two products. You've extended the range to include balm, mask and sleek.
Mm-hmm.
How does that product development process work for you? Are you constantly thinking about things that you would like to make and to use? Are you working off what your customers are asking for, or is it a balance of the two?
It's kind of a balance, but it really is like what the customer wants.
Yeah.
One thing about the brand is I want everything to be super simple. I don't want to have like multiple products that can kind of do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So like our cleanser, you can use it as a shampoo, face wash, body wash, bubble bath, hand wash, all of the above. So I just want everything to be multi-use and so simple so you don't have to have lots of things. Because another thing when you have allergies and intolerances is your ingredient load. Mm-hmm. So they have like a bucket. And if you put too many ingredients in your bucket, it gets too full and then that's when you kind of can flare up.
Oh, that's not a fun way, but that's an interesting way of looking. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it's like if people are fructose intolerant, they say like maybe just have like a small punnet of, you know, blueberries.
Yeah.
But if you have a whole punnet, you're going to flare up. It's the same kind of thing with ingredients. So it's like the less ingredients you have in your life, the easier your life is.
Okay.
And we were getting, well, when we developed balm, that was our third product. I actually got a really bad case of perioral dermatitis.
That's a fun one.
Yeah. I sent a photo to the formulator and I was like, what is this? How do I fix this? And I was using pawpaw, which pawpaw is fine for everyone else, but it's high in salicylates. Yeah. So I was like, this isn't for me. So we developed that off the back of my own experience with that, and I did that with the community. And then after that, I got asked, like, I reckon multiple times a day about scalp psoriasis or just flaky scalps. So that's where we developed Mask, and that was probably one of my favorite because there were so many people in the community that were dealing with it.
Yeah.
And I picked out one girl, Brooke, who had it pretty bad, and she basically trialed the product before we sent it for dermatologically testing, and she was like, I'm obsessed.
Wow.
Yeah, so we trialed it with her and then we used her in the photo shoot when we launched the product.
And she's just someone that was already a customer just
So she's just like a teacher in Adelaide.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. But that's what I mean, like she would respond to DMs being like, love this, and then I'd be like, tell me a bit more about your story, or she would tell me, oh, this is a photo of my scalp psoriasis, I just can't do anything about it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a product based off this.
Wow.
And I was trying to work out a way that someone could have something on their scalp but not during the day.
Yeah.
So when I went to the formulator, I was like, let's put this on at nighttime. They sleep in it. They wake up the next day. Mm. They wash it out and then they just wash their hair as usual. So it doesn't really affect their day. Because so many people walk around with like lotions in their hair and they go to work and they have to wear like a hat.
Yep.
And I'm like, you don't want that.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So that's how we developed that. And then Sleek was just everyone wanted a shampoo and conditioner.
Yeah.
So Sleek is our conditioner, and we already had Clean, and they're like, why do you have a shampoo and no conditioner? I'm like, well, because Clean kind of does everything. Mm. And I love Sleek. It's like the best conditioner ever. Makes your hair so shiny.
A thought that I have just had as you were talking, on multi-use products, I haven't spoken about this on the podcast in ages, but from a business perspective, a money-making perspective, the downside, like as a consumer, multi-use, fantastic. You only have to buy one product. But if you're out there trying to make money, there would have to be a little bit of a temptation to just go more. Yeah. So there is a real strength in knowing who your customer is and pulling it back and going, okay, yeah. No. Well, we've already got Clean and that can do it all. So we don't have to launch another product.
Like, I can say that I'm not here to make money. Everyone works to make money.
Yeah.
But I'm not here to pull extra money from people just to make their lives easier. This makes their lives easier. It makes my life easier too by having one product. And so if they just buy the one product, I don't really care that there's not six other ones that they should be purchasing, because everything in my life is simple and I want everyone else's life to be simple too, because you don't need a million other things. I don't need to make money that way. I'd prefer to make money by another product that would help your life.
Yeah, I respect that, because there are brands that would just take Clean, put it in a different bottle, maybe change one element and say, look, shampoo.
This is so many people have told me to do that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm like, but it does the same thing.
Yeah.
There's no point. And it's additional packaging that you don't need in your life.
Yeah. No.
I've also lived in an apartment for the past 15 years. I don't have the space.
It's simply not an option. You have been a beauty brand founder since 2020, but have been part of the beauty industry for over a decade now. Over, say, the last few years, what have been some of the biggest changes that you've seen within the beauty industry?
I would definitely say the emphasis on how the product works for your life.
Yep.
I think previously it was just like, you know, you would see like a big L'Oreal or Maybelline ad and then you'd be like, cool, that's new, I'll buy it. But now I think it's like thinking of the ingredients and knowing, you know, what they do to you, whether they're too potent, whether they're not. Like, you would see now that all those big brands say they don't add all of these ingredients now, whereas I feel like they didn't used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they're using a lot of influencers for all of their campaigns. I'm like the same but a bit to the other side, because it's like we are very big on what's not in our products and we're very big on what will make your life easier. We don't really use influencers. We use customers instead.
Yeah.
So everything for us is a bit more realistic, which is similar to what brands are doing, but brands are just, I think, more commercial about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
But, yeah, I think the models are so much less model-y now.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a really good way of putting it.
Mm.
What changes do you think we can expect to see from the industry over the coming few years?
I think it will continue. I think for me, I have noticed that I'm not saying that we're a brand that people are copying, but I've noticed that people are trying to do the customer thing as well now.
Yes.
So I think a lot of the time people will be doing that. I think we'll be using less big influencers because you don't really see the return as much anymore. It's mainly just wanting to see people who are real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally understand that. My final question, what is next for Yours Only?
Hopefully retail.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was really big on not going into retail for the first 3 years because of the education piece.
Yeah.
And I feel like now we've got a community and now we've got the education. I've said no to so many retailers and now.
Yeah. What a nice position to be
in. Yeah. Kind of. And then I've got two major retailers that I'm talking to, but I have to pick one. So hopefully at some point this year we'll be able to do that, just because there's so many customers who have, you know, intolerances that don't want to just buy online.
Yeah, okay.
And they want to be able to go in store and feel and touch it and see it first. So hopefully that's our next step.
That was Ashley Templar, founder of Yours Only, which you can find on Instagram at Yours Only. To read more, you can visit glowjournal.com. And for more beauty news, you can find me on Instagram at gemdiamond or at glow.journal. If you liked this episode, please do not forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share so other beauty and business lovers can find us. I'm Gemma Diamond. You've been listening to the Glow Journal podcast, and thank you for joining me.
The Glow Journal podcast would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people, the traditional custodians of the land upon which this podcast is produced. We pay our respects to elders past and present.